Hello, and welcome to Marching On, the podcast brought to you by the ACLU of Kansas. I'm Esme Tseng, Communications Director, and I thank you for joining us. Today, we have a double feature for you. First, Communications Manager Jesse Kielman is joined by Lindsay Callender, our Policy Manager, to give a quick preview of the Kansas legislative session, which just began earlier in January. Lindsay gives a whistle-stop tour of what we expect around our campaigns for voting rights and criminal legal reform, as well as an overview of what we can expect in the state capitol writ large. Second, Jesse is joined by Matthew Newman, founder and executive director for the LGBTQ Foundation of Kansas, based in Western Kansas. Matthew shares about his journey and how the foundation has grown to be a connector, resource, and so much more. Listeners should be aware that this conversation covers sensitive topics pertaining to mental health challenges and self-harm, so listener discretion is advised. So first up, here's Jesse and Lindsay.
It is that magical time of the year again here in Kansas. Legislative session has started up, as it does at the beginning of every year. I'm here with Lindsay Callender, our policy manager, to talk about everything that's happening under the dome. Lindsay, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
So right off the rip, we have two campaigns here at the ACLU. One is Represent, which focuses on voting rights. The other is Reimagine Justice, which focuses on criminal legal reform. So I want to hear what's happening in the State House that might affect or be part of both of those campaigns. So I would love to start with voting rights, if that sounds good with you.
Yeah, sounds great. There's a lot happening, unfortunately, underneath the dome when it comes to voting rights. As we know, SB 4, which eliminated the 3-day grace period, did pass the legislature last session. So Pat Proctor has openly made it very well known that he is looking to further restrict your constitutional right to vote. So just within the first week of legislative session, we had an onslaught of voting rights bills that were introduced into his House Elections Committee. And two of those have already got hearings, and we've had to provide testimony on them. The first one being one that works to expand voter purge methods, and the second one restricting who has the right to register individuals to vote. That one, HB 2438, is a high concern for the ACLU because who you choose to register to vote with is an expression of your First Amendment right. So restricting it to only those who have a .gov domain, which essentially is just the Secretary of State's website, is a huge violation, especially with websites like KS Votes that are widely used throughout nonprofit worlds and advocacy spaces to register individuals to vote. Makes it increasingly difficult to attain your First Amendment right, which is, of course, the right to have a say in your government.
I'm blown away by the, like, pedantry.
Yeah.
Like, of it, of like, no, yeah. You can register with whoever you want as long as they have a .gov.
Right,
which
right.
You only give to government actors.
Exactly, like, exactly. And they're doing it underneath this disguise of it makes it more secure. But in reality, funneling everyone through one space actually can expose more vulnerability. And they created an amendment that makes it a criminal penalty to register with individuals who are not a part of this .gov domain or not through the Secretary of State's website. So
you won't even know if you have violated
the law. Exactly. Exactly.
To you, as the person registering to vote, you have just registered to vote as one does.
Exactly.
But it might have been through a quote unquote unauthorized source or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's a penalty, I'm guessing, also for the people doing the registry as well as the register.
Right. Well, not necessarily just for the register, but you won't know as the register that you didn't successfully register to vote. So you'll show up to the polls day of election day.
Feeling real good.
Right. Exactly. And you are not eligible to vote. You might be given a ballot, but that doesn't necessarily mean that your vote will be counted when they actually go through on the back end. So a lot of issues being brought to light, which is a similar bill. And they also haven't really worked through the rules and regulations of this bill. And with it becoming legal, as soon as it's entered into the statute book, it doesn't have a lot of clarity of how this is actually going to be implemented. So it's a very concerning bill.
So it's bad and then ambiguous on top of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Cool. So essentially the worst that you could possibly see at this point. There have been amendments that have been proposed and they are working on a bipartisan solution at the moment. But still, the overall premise of this bill is extremely dangerous.
Cool. And by cool, I mean not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, thank you for the update there. I'm sure things will be sunnier when you let us know what's happening for criminal legal reform.
I wish. No, there are some good bills that have been introduced in terms of criminal legal reform. The first one being the Second Look Act. It was introduced last session and it did get a little bit of support with Senate leadership as well as the Judiciary Committee. This act looks to essentially reinvestigate or relook at individuals who have been in jail for long periods of time, especially those who were sentenced as juveniles. You are not the same person that you were at 13, that you are at 33, that you are at 63, and that you are 83. So they're individuals who have been behind bars for years, decades, who are essentially have become new people, have been able to restart their lives, and deserve a second chance. Do they have the ability to reenter society in a positive way? The Second Look Act is one thing that we at the ACLU have worked with in the interim period as well. So we were able to get a hearing in, I believe it was November, where we had a lot of individuals come and give their own testimony as well as testimony on behalf of individuals who are still sitting behind bars. And we were able to get some good traction on that. So we're hoping we'll be able to continue moving that forward and hopefully get a committee hearing. The result of the hearing in the interim period was a little ambiguous. So we're not sure exactly where it stands, but it is one of our priorities moving forward.
That's awesome. And one of the things about that bill that I think is so important is that it just creates, and you mentioned this, but to put a finer point on this, of like, it creates another opportunity to relook at these cases.
Right.
But it doesn't do anything automatically.
Right.
It just gives literally another opportunity of you have been incarcerated for a period of time. Are you in a spot that you can be released? And it just creates that check. And the answer can be no.
Right, exactly. It just opens a door that wasn't there before. That we're not opening any floodgates. We're not increasing a risk to society by any means. We're just giving these individuals who haven't had the opportunity to before have the opportunity to relook at their cases.
Yeah. I always am blown away that like the United States has the most people incarcerated in the world.
Yes.
Not by percentage, but by absolute population. So like countries like China that have vastly higher populations than us still have fewer people incarcerated somehow, which is just an amazing job by us.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that we're really good at here.
Yeah. So just one thing to chip away at that.
Right. Post. Exactly.
So yeah, necessary.
Exactly.
Awesome. Exactly. Anything else on criminal legal reform that you want to touch on?
The only other thing that I'll mention is that there have been a couple of harmful juvenile justice bills that have also been introduced within the first week of the legislative session. The first one being expanding those who can be admitted to juvenile detention centers from just high risk to also moderate risk, which research has shown that that can increase recidivism. It does increase mental health issues as well within these juvenile detention facilities. So we in Kansas from like 2010 to 2020, even early in the 2000s, were working on really dialing back these juvenile justice reforms. But now we can see that in this legislature, they're honestly working on undoing a lot of that work that has been done. So it just kind of sets the tone for this legislative session moving forward.
So more broadly, beyond just voting rights and criminal legal reforms, what else do we kind of expect this session?
Yeah, the tone was set pretty early. The first bill that was pushed through was an anti-trans legislative bill. This was looking at gender marker IDs and requiring individuals to have a gender marker ID that reflects their sex at birth. This is extremely harmful to individuals who have completed their transition, who are now fully identifying as their chosen sex, but they are required to essentially be outed by the Kansas government during traffic stops, requiring them to essentially forward this bill onto a bathroom bill, to a sports ban bill, you name it. This legislation pretty much opens the door, not only just on gender markers and birth certificates, but to an onslaught of anti-trans bills. So this bill is extremely, extremely dangerous. It was rushed through a hearing and did not give any time, less than 24 hours, for public testimony to be given. There has been some confusion on how this bill is to go moving forward, if it's going to be worked in committee, if it's going to be sent straight to the floor, if it's going to be then rushed through the Senate side. This is just kind of setting the tone in general when it comes to LGBTQ rights. So unfortunately, that is a big, big concern of the ACLU this legislative session.
I want to end on a note of empowerment. And I know that the ACLU Kansas, specifically you working with Alina in our communications department, have created resources, including a legislative hub for people that want to follow along. Do you want to give just kind of an overview of what people can expect to find there?
Yeah, of course. Please look at our legislative hub at ACLU Kansas. It's the first thing that will pop up on the website. We will track bills there live. If they're passing committee, if they're on the floor, if votes have happened on them, if they have passed, and if they have passed, what that means for you or your community. And we will also be updating if there's testimony that's needed, they'll be seen there. And it'll track bills for anywhere from just not even our own two campaigns, but also immigration, DEI, LGBTQ rights. Basically, just a hotspot for anything that might be happening underneath the dome. We'll make it easy and accessible, and you'll be able to understand it in language that is not as confusing as the legal language that's used to, unfortunately, confuse individuals underneath the Capitol Dome. We will make it easily digestible for you there. So please look at our hub. We are doing everything we can to make what's happening under the dome accessible for you.
That's really important to know. And beyond that, if people want to participate, I know sometimes there are opportunities to send testimony yourself or take action or contact lawmakers. Where can people expect to find those opportunities?
Yeah, so we'll update if testimony is available. Unfortunately, the deadline is really fast, so it can be anywhere from 48 or, as we've even seen in the previous week, less than 24 hours to give testimony. There is a testimony toolkit on our website that you can look at in order to kind of know what's needed before testimony is required so that you can kind of get into the groove before there is that quick turnaround. However, when that comes up, there will be opportunities on our website as well as looking at the KS Legislature website. You'll be able to see there too when things are available and open for testimony.
That's awesome. That's really important. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for your time today too, Lindsay.
Yeah, of course.
Good luck out there.
Thank you. We need it.
Do you just want to maybe start by like introducing yourself and maybe how you started the LGBTQ Foundation? And I'd love to hear about just kind of your journey and life experiences and why you've kind of been drawn to this work.
So I'm Matthew Newman, he, him, his, and I just kind of accidentally did this. So I'm a trans man in a town of 4,000 people. I'm 45 minutes from where I grew up. I grew up in a town called Gentleman, Kansas, which has 1,000 people. I'm in Larned, Kansas now, which has 4,000 people. You know, I was in juvenile corrections when we had a juvenile correctional facility out here, and I got a neck injury. So I went on disability, and then I got into nannying kids, and then I got really into nannying traumatized kids, like foster to adopt. And I was with a family for 7-8 years, and the mom came home one day, and she said, "Do you know this trans man?" And I said, "I do not." And she goes, "Well, he died by suicide yesterday." And I went, "How were me, a trans man, and another trans man in a town of 4,000 people not know each other?" And I thought, that's horrible. Like, we should have, I don't want to put responsibility on myself that I could have stopped his suicide, but I think that I could have supported him, you know? And I thought, we should support each other. And so I went out on social media and I said, "My name is Matt Newman and I'm a queer man and I want to know other queer people and I want to start a support group." And so the support group started and we met like 50 people and we invited them into the support group and we started supporting each other. And before long, somebody came in there and says, "Where do I find my daughter a size 13 dress shoe?" And everybody jumped on and they were like, "Oh yeah, well, we know where to do this." And before long, I started getting like really excited, like, what if I could find the answers before they asked the questions? So I started looking for the helpers. Yeah, I'm a Mr. Rogers kid, you know, look for the helpers, you know? And so I started looking for the helpers and I started interviewing them. And I got hooked up with the neighboring movement in Wichita, Kansas, and they taught me to meet my neighbors. And, you know, buying the resources in your neighborhood. And I thought, well, I'm on the internet. And so what if my neighbors are on the internet? So I started interviewing not just organizations like the ACLU and Equality Kansas. I started interviewing individual people and found out their resources. So what it happened to be is, you know, all of a sudden I had, you know, 200 people that were resources. And we were just like, somebody came in and said, "I just want to let you know that this, you know, tragedy happened and my 14-year-old attempted suicide and he's a trans kid." And I'm like, just information is not good enough. And so I got with the mom and we hooked her up with other moms of trans kids. And then we hooked up that kid when I thought he woke up because he was really ill. By the time he woke up, he had get well letters from other kids his age. And we were like making major connections. And now 6 years later, we have 3,000 people that we're supporting across two socials, a huge amount of support for each other across organizations. We're a suicide support. We do all sorts of things now, but that's kind of how we got started.
That's really cool. And you just said across two socials. What exactly does that mean? And could you talk to us more about like the structure of how you connect people and the structure of how the organization works more generally?
Absolutely. So we're on Facebook, and that's where we started because that's where I was getting my support. I get my support online, and that's where a lot of people get support, especially when 2020 hit, right? Because with COVID, everybody went indoors, right? And so everybody became like me. That was normal for me, but nobody knew how to navigate that, but I did. And so everybody was inside. I was bringing them onto onboarding into these groups on my Facebook. And so we have LGBTQ support in Kansas on Facebook. It's just a very safe environment. We have very strict rules and safety because we have kids in there. I mean, if you're over 13, you can be on Facebook. So we've had to create rules within there to keep our community safe. We also have a group for disabled queer individuals because there's a huge overlap between queer community and disabled people. And so we created a space for that. The youth said, we don't use Facebook. So we created a Discord. People are like trickling in, but it's growing. And more people are using that all over Kansas. And so it's just growing and people are coming in there. And there's dating areas. There's areas that kids and no adult can go in there except for myself and a youth leader. Our other admins are not allowed in there because we limited the amount of adults that are in that youth space. And we've even created a youth verification system. We've had to think outside of the box because these spaces have never been created before. And so how this works is I have a volunteer system. And so to be one of my volunteers, you have to be trained in a class called Suspenders for Hope. Suspenders for Hope is a WSU class that I help support them with. Well, they created the Suspenders for Hope, and I help them make it LGBTQ specific. And I teach it to every one of my volunteers and anybody else that wants it. I teach it once a month. I have a schedule, and it's out on the internet. Anybody can have the class. It's an hour and a half class on how to be a friend when somebody's suicidal. And it's just a great how to be there for somebody. So if somebody comes into one of our chat rooms and needs any kind of resource, right now we have somebody who has a blood disorder. And so this is not even a queer resource, right? So they need arm crutches. So I'm going to go out after this meeting and I'm going to find them arm crutches for free. And I'm going to pick them up. And then the next time I travel through his town, I'm going to stop and give him arm crutches. I have somebody else that, you know, reaching out because he's going to have a gender affirming surgery and he wants his hotel covered. So he reached out for mutual aid. So we'll reach out to see if anybody can help him with his hotel room. And if not, we have some grants that might be able to help him from that. But then we have people that'll come in and just say, I need a friend. And so we'll talk to him. But if it gets to the point where they are suicidal, I want every one of my volunteers to be prepared for that situation. So they're all trained because the ultimate idea of this is to lower the suicide rate in everything that I do. So if you work for anything with a foundation, you're trained in that class. So we take any request, but you don't have to be a volunteer to fulfill a request because our motto is people helping people. So we have 3,000 people helping each other. So it doesn't have to be my 10 volunteers going out and doing all the resource hunting. It's people helping each other. So the people are the resources. They don't have to be one of the certain people that have went through the interview and the training. They can just be there and, you know, help each other. and the volunteers have just done the specialized training.
That's really cool. The crutches is such an example. Like, what an odd thing that I didn't think I would ever need. And now I do. And like, I don't, do I go like, yeah, what do I do? I love how the internet can be used for that, for just connecting people to just help each other out or whatever. So I really love hearing about the way that you're doing that too. So I know you're based out in Western Kansas. Is the organization itself, is it technically Western Kansas or is it statewide? And like, where do you find people come from even beyond like the exact territory, you know?
It is online and it is statewide. When I started the organization, I concentrated on Western Kansas because it's so rural. But, and I've learned this through my 6 years of doing this, every city in Kansas is technically rural, including Wichita. However, we have since then reached out more to Eastern Kansas and done a lot more in Topeka and Lawrence and even started reaching into Kansas City. And we've done a lot even in lower Eastern Kansas, you know, that Southeast Kansas, because it's so rural down there. I'm even thinking of doing a birthday party. I turn 10 years as Matthew in October, and I'm thinking about going out to MCARE and throwing a birthday party and just celebrating out in Wichita and doing a fundraiser with MCARE and just getting a bunch of people together for a barbecue.
MCARE is awesome too. They have been really great. And
yeah,
congrats 10 years. Happy birthday. That's so cool.
Thank you. Yeah. 10 years is Matt. It's been a crazy ride to think that 10 years ago I had to pay out of pocket with me being on Medicare and Medicaid for a therapist to get started on testosterone. And then in Wichita, I had to talk a doctor into learning about testosterone and call outside of Wichita to learn how to prescribe testosterone. We were trying to find people to give us hormones in Wichita 10 years ago, and to think how far Kansas has come, and yet we still have so far to go.
10 years as Matthew is very cool. If you were talking to like year one or day one Matthew, what message would you give to him?
Well, so I did a what did I notice about my voice on, you know, day one, and then I did a year of what did I notice, and I said the confidence. So now I've been 9 years on testosterone, and the amount of confidence of being myself is come so far, and the amount that I've changed. So not to myself, but to all of the younger trans people out there, I would just have to say, just hold on. It's not about testosterone and it's not about estrogen or surgeries. The more that you are authentically yourself, the more confident that you get, the more that you get to shine through, and how cool that gets to be. And the longer that you're authentically yourself and you shed off those bad people and those good people come through, the cooler life gets. And so just hang on for that, especially this year, as things are, I say the world's burning this year, but the world has burnt many, many times. And when things burn, new growth comes.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. To quote the American poet William Joel, we didn't start the fire.
That's right. That is right.
So corny.
I love they redid that song. So
I saw that. Yeah, that was great. I was going to ask, like, just what you've seen, like, the connections, like how you've seen that transform, and if you wanted to share any favorite stories. That sounds like you've already shared so many specific things that I've absolutely loved, but I'll take more of those if you have other specific things. But in, beyond that, what do you think has come from connecting people in this way?
Wow. It's just been so great, you know, being a connector, because, you know, I've been in spaces that I never thought that I would be. And my ex, I told him once that I knew every queer person west of Wichita. And he said, I don't believe that. Then my next boyfriend was in Oklahoma, south of Oklahoma City. And I got a dog from him. I named him Link. My service dog is named Zelda, just to tell you how much of a geek I am. But that trans man down south of Oklahoma said, I found a home for another puppy, another service trans man, but he's in Dodge City. And he told me his name, and I told him his last name. And he goes, how did you know that? And I said, because I know every queer person west of Wichita. And it's been so cool to get to know just, you know, and a lot of these people I know online, and they always, when people get my picture out and about, they call it getting Matt in the wild, because I'm still agoraphobic. I still only go out basically in June. I travel now. I've had to do a lot of therapy in the last 6 years. I have traveled to Indiana, then drove to Chicago. I mean, got to go see an aquarium with dolphins, and they got to take me to the back part of the, because the elevator was closed and they didn't want my service dog to eat a penguin. It was funny. And the person that took me in the back part of the aquarium was a trans man. So that was really cool. So I've had to do a lot of healing myself, but it's been great just meeting. Like, I was out in Dodge City at a pride, because I've even gotten up on stage and talked to people, you know, talked about suicide and my journey being agoraphobic to being on stage talking about suicide and these groups. And I was on Dodge City 2-3 years ago. And this man came up to me and he goes, you said that you can use all of us. You know, everybody is a resource. He said, you can't use me. And I said, I bet you I could. I can prove it. And he goes, well, I just got out of prison. He goes, I'm useless. I said, no, you're not. And he goes, how am I not useless? He goes, I've spent the last 20 years in prison. He goes, I have no value. I said, hell, you don't. I said, why don't you go out here and you live, but you give me your phone number. I said, in a couple of months, when I have another guy get out of prison and he calls me and he says, Matt, how do I do it? I don't know how to live. I've been in prison for the last 20 years. I don't know how to live outside of an institution. And I'll say, you know what? I know Jim's number and he's done figured it out. I'm going to give him your number and he's going to call you. And you're going to take every bit of knowledge that you've done between now and then, and you're going to guide him. So you can't tell me you're useless, because it's hard as hell, isn't it? And he goes, yeah, it is. He goes, I got to figure that out. I said, good. I said, you figure it out. You give me your number. You call me every time you struggle, and we'll figure this out together. I said, and then the next guy gets out. I said, you're going to help him for me, okay? And he calls me because my number is on a pamphlet that's out in libraries and health departments. It goes to my personal phone number. Everybody has my numbers on the web. And he calls me and he texts me and he tells me how he's doing. And you know, I mean, this has been 3 years. He's still out living. And if he struggles, I mean, when he wanted a drink one time, he called me. Last summer, I had a guy call me. And he said, I got your brochure. I want to take your class, Suspenders for Hope. And I said, well, I'll teach it to you. I teach my class on the computer. He goes, I'll have a computer. I said, if I found you a computer, would you take the class? He said, yeah. So I called the neighboring movement out there in Wichita. And I said, can I borrow a computer? So we set it up and he went there. And they said, well, he's quite a character. And I said, yes, he is. And he sat down with a trans woman that was, you know, about 50 years old and just barely out trans woman. And he goes, I just want you both to know I'm an old racist. I said, well, sir, I kind of figured that. And I said, well, welcome to my class. And that was the most interesting class I'd ever taught in my life online. And I had to re-guide that class a couple times, and that class went on an extra 30, 45 minutes. But, you know, I taught Charles, you know, about suicide so he can be there for his granddaughter. And his granddaughter's friend ended up committing suicide. So he was there for her. And he called me, and he himself ended up being suicidal and called me. But he had my number because of that pamphlet. And, you know, it's, you know, the foundation is not just for queer people. Sometimes it's for old racists to find her pamphlet. and end up being your friend that have your phone number. I work with a lot of people that I never thought that I would work with. And I'm friends with people that I never thought that I would be friends with. There's still, you know, safe spaces. Like I would never have certain people on my Facebook because I don't get upset on my phone. I pay for that phone. I don't want to be upset on something that I pay for. But I'm always down for, you know, sitting down with a friend's parents that want to talk about a trans athlete and explaining how that has nothing to do with their world. And, you know, bringing them down to calm down about trans people and, you know, walking away with them going, oh, maybe that doesn't really matter to my life, you know, and then my friend going, oh, that worked out a lot better than I thought it would when, you know, I invited you over, you know, and so it's a lot different world than I expected that I would be in.
And that's what we need at different points in this world. Don't want to be reinforcing or allowing something that's not okay, but also recognizing that conflict is not going to make them gain perspective either. And just like what the exact strategy there within is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those sit down and one-on-one conversations are a lot more valuable than fighting with somebody on the internet or, you know, screaming in somebody's face. And, you know, storytelling, I've learned a lot, goes back to being a connector, is I've learned a lot by sitting down and talking with people. I've noticed that sitting down and talking with people and saying, how do you do this? How do you start a nonprofit? How do you go and talk to somebody at the Capitol? How do you write a letter to the governor and ask her to veto a bill? And just ask people, and people will sit down with you and answer those questions and be really nice about that. And you don't necessarily have to have a degree, and it's not necessarily having connections. I just went to people and said, hey, I have a Zoom account. Will you sit down with me sometime when you're available and answer questions? So when I first started this, I said, how do you start a nonprofit? And somebody said, here's this book by somebody who started GLAAD, and read this book before you do anything. And I did. And you just take the advice. And one of the things that Ray said to me one time, he put it on the internet. It was the greatest thing anybody's ever said about me, is that I'm not afraid to do things that I don't know how to do. And that's because when I fail at doing something is I learn from that. And then I take what I learn and I do it again. And then I do it again. And then I do it again. And then eventually I get it right. And then I just keep doing things until eventually it works for me. And I'm just a hard knocks kid. And I just come from a really bad background and doing things the hard way enough until it just finally works out. And I get so much pleasure from the success stories. Like we were able to, somebody's yard got overran this summer, and we were able to take $50 off the $120 bill, and they were so thankful. I mean, we wasn't even able to pay half of it, and they were just so thankful. You know, I mean, stuff like that just, you know, makes my life better. And so it's my legacy. It's wonderful.
I absolutely love that, and I appreciate so much your time sharing with all that with me. This has been a ton of fun. I want to make sure before I leave, I sometimes have like these things of like, oh, you didn't ask about that. So I just want to make sure, is there anything I didn't ask or anything that you think we should touch on that we just haven't had an opportunity to get to yet?
So I do want to say in the future, I don't know when, we have the most brilliant trans woman. She's a code writer, and she's, you know, a code writer and her real job. So she's on her spare time. In the middle of it, she's writing us a social media site for queer people. So this is taking time because she's got a real working job. But the future of the foundation is someday we will have our own social media site, so we won't have to rely on Discord and Facebook. We will have our own, I call it Queer Book. That's not its real name. We have not named it yet. We have not named it. I won't be the one naming. I don't name anything. There's a rule about that. I don't name anything. We won't have to rely on on, which social would be on, we'll have our own someday.
That's so cool. That's really awesome. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for your time, and hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jesse. I appreciate meeting with you.
Thank you to Matt and Lindsay for joining us, and thank you to the always helpful Jesse, who makes our comms team so much better. To stay plugged in this legislative session, visit our website, aclukansas.org, and find the Legislative Hub either from the homepage or the main menu under Resources. There you can find the bills we're following and what's happening with them, our testimonies, plus any opportunities you may have to make your voice heard about these bills. Again, that's the 2026 Legislative Hub found on our website. One other quick promo. The ACLU of Kansas proudly hosts the Marching On Microgrant Program, where Kansas grassroots organizations working for civil liberties can receive a small stipend to support their work. We're proud to have the LGBTQ Foundation of Kansas as a partner and to have supported them in a small way through this grant program. If you have or know of a grassroots organization doing work for civil liberties, we are welcoming further applicants for this program. So please go to our website. In the main menu under About, you can learn more about the Marching On Microgrant Program, including how to apply. That does it for this episode of Marching On. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next month with more conversations with the people at the heart of the civil liberties movement in Kansas. So until next time, keep marching on.